Ladies and gentlemen, you can now fire questions at me. I'd like to mention that for the first time, we also have the option to ask questions. So all internet participants can ask questions too. All those who participate in this conference are encouraged to ask questions via the system. I will read the questions, and then the two gentlemen will answer the questions. Please always use the microphone and say who you are, who you work for.
Thomas Schießler, Equities. Dr. Bethke, first of all, thank you very much for your good job, for your great job of the Board of Directors and all employees, male and female. And this is topped by this dividend increase for the shareholders. My question, you change hands now. Mr. Steiner, what is the motto of your leadership? How will you start off and what will you do with potash and salt in the future? Did I get you right that you asked this question to Dr. Bethke? Well, this is how you put it. No, I thanked him for his great job. Thanked him for the great job of the team, but the question, of course, was to you, of course. The motto is experiencing growth. That's the same motto that we had in the past years, and I think we have implemented it well. Under the leadership and the board of Dr. Bethke, we all contributed to that goal, and it's such a beautiful slogan. I don't want to abolish this right away on the 1st of July. So we'll continue to follow the same strategy. And of course, also due to the conditions of the market, of our surrounding, it might change. But let me say, we should not think too much about the time after the 1st of July. It's very close. You are right. Might be important for you. We shouldn't talk about that right now. Dr. Bethke is still the CEO, and he will definitely do his best till the 30th of June. So I don't want to say anything about the time afterwards. So I hope you understand. Maybe I can add on that the strategy is not the strategy of one person alone. It never, ever was that way. Colleagues, the team members, and the supervisory board. All this was a cooperation to determine the strategic goals of the company against the backdrop of the market situation, the competition situation, the demand situation. I believe there is no reason, if I can put it that way, to change those efforts. I mean, they're all long-term in order to increase the goodwill of the K plus S group. That is organic growth, cost efficiency, efficiency growth, but also with prudent and meaningful synergies and acquisitions and cooperation. Syngenta, that's a good example. You need not only acquire in order to create additional value, also with prudent cooperation, you can achieve something like that. SPL, that was the acquisition, and I think it will go on like that. I just wanted to add it that not just to present the situation as it is, also explain, as Mr. Steiner, it will be a smooth transition. Christian Freitz, Oppenheim. Dr. Bethke, I think this morning in the press conference and also at other meetings with analysts, you mentioned it. You said that experiencing growth will also take place in the future in Eastern Europe. Can you explain the goals here? What kind of corporations have you thought of? Would it be a majority acquisition or whatever? Thank you. Thank you very much for that question. We have started that already. With Compo, we have developed our own platforms in Poland together with Kali Salts. We have tried to develop a cooperation in Hungary. We are also thinking about other Eastern European countries. Well, no. As Germans, we are used to always look west on the map. We have to get used to looking to the east as well. We are directly in the middle with our mines, with our production sites. We have attractive partners there for salt, but also for Compo, and probably also with potash. So we have acquired there already a storage site at Kompo in the Baltic states. And there we have a minority share, and we get a lot of earth for flowers and plants. And I think that's really important that we also supply peat there. Eastern Europe is just as under focus as Latin America. Maybe from the internet I can read out the question of Matthias Heine. First of all, about investment. The budget is 210 million, quite higher, clearly higher than last year. Can you talk about the inclusion of SPL and also the ships? As you mentioned before, waste incinerating plant and the water pipes. Yes, I can just confirm, as it has been listed. These are the essential explanations for the increase of the investment budget. Second question by Mr. Heine. With respect to corporations at Potash, have you thought of more concrete ideas? No, for many years in our company, we have taken efforts, technical, economic, commercial, strategic efforts, if I can put it that way. So I've taken those efforts to find interesting potash projects for us, to study them and find out whether we can invest here. But we are not at the end of it. Mr. Spanou? Köhler, mine first. A question about SPL. The figures are confusing me a bit, how much revenue you generated in the fourth quarter, and can you tell me what a provisionary revenue would have been for 2006? And then also salts, including SPL. Can you tell us how big the winter salt share is in a normal year? I mean, what kind of fluctuations do we have to face? That's the first part of the question. Then second question, you talked about Brazil and expansions in Brazil. You're quite optimistic, but there is still this liquidity crisis. What would you expect in Brazil in terms of expansion? And then a third question, at Kompo, you said 7 million cost savings. EBIT only went up by 4 million, so there is margin pressure on the other side. How would you explain that? And what about the operative development for the near future? Let's talk about Kompo first of all. It seems to contradict, but we don't have the same cost increases that we have in other areas. With the 7 million, you know, or let me say at Contour, we had about 12 to 13 million savings net. Yeah, we identified them and we have nearly used them. 1 to 2 million are still missing. And this is the 7 million of the Kompo effective for the year 2006. But on the other hand, of course, we had growing costs, unfortunately, that used it partly up. But this is sustainable. And if this year again we have smaller costs for ammonium and maybe in general terms for energy, and also an expansion of the volume business. I mean, these 7 million will stay in our cost system, and then they would improve margins and revenues. So you expect that there was a pressure on margins only for a short period of time. I mentioned that before, weather. I mean, this year, if you look out, we didn't have cold weather. Last year, at the same time, we had minus temperatures. So it was about structures that changed in the assortment and, unfortunately, also among the people that work for us in France and in Germany and also in logistics. So we made savings in a sustainable manner, and we really made that in the year 2006 to that figure. But business is living on cost side, on volume sides. I mean, it's a living system. And, you know, better results for Kompo this year because of volumes and prices. And at the same time, we have under-proportionate cost growth. I mean, that's a very positive situation for this year. So you see, it's a sustainable improvement, expanding of surface. I mean, in Brazil, we hear that the rainforest is cut now as before, and this is not what we want. I mean, it was in Mato Grosso 2 years ago. I saw how they work, how industrial they work. And the Brazilians, I mean, they will come back to the two-harvest method, and then they will further intensify their crops, their yields. I don't hope they expand even more. It's rather the intensification that I mentioned before. And we have noticed that the Brazilians use much more fertilizers. I mean, they publish what they use in terms of nitrogen and potash and what they import into Brazil. And we expect that another 6 million tons, and in the year 2005, we exported it to Brazil, and we will come to 6 million this year. And this goes hand in glove with this intensification of field cultivation. And maybe some areas will also be used for industrial purposes. Now, the SPL. The SPL was consolidated in the second half of last year. And the amount stated of 82 million that you read is completely due to SPL, to the SPL revenue. Well, you asked about a normal year, how it would have been in 2006. I mean, I can't give you the figures. But maybe I can describe a normal year for SPL. When we looked at SPL, it was an extraordinarily good year. That was the year 2005. They had $350 million revenue. That is 260 million euros, more or less, at normal conditions. So it will be clearly above 200 with a sales volume of 4.5 million short tons, so 3.8, 3.9 million de-icing salt. So that's the normal planned volume for the company in comparison with Europe. If we take the average of the past 10 years, I mean, it was about 2 million tons, right, for de-icing salts. And last year, I mean, we were spoiled. We had volumes of more than 3 million. So if we break that down, at ESCO last year was 400 million euros plus. And if we assume the 300 million here, that will be a normal year. Salt, you know, 500 million euros, more or less. This is my estimate. And we should bear in mind the business of SPL now takes place in the north of the world, in the United States as well. They have similar criteria for the winter season as in Europe. The main months are January, February, March. So also like here, November, December might offer additional income and allow more orders to come in. But the main focus is in the first quarter. And if, just as we had it in Europe this year, in March, there was no order for salt. Not only we had a mild winter, but a super mild winter. I mean, I don't want to discuss about energy and climatic conditions here, but then you can imagine that this is below our planned volumes. I mean, these are factors that might reduce the results then. Did I answer your questions with that, Mr. Spannung?
Yeah, Pascal Spannung, Credit Suisse.
Three questions, if I may. the free cash flow statement. Maybe that should be discussed bilaterally. One question, the 45 million for the selling of securities included in your cash flow that you stated with 130 million. Can you tell me what kind of securities that were, where they came from? And then second question, what about the goodwill of SPL? How much can it tolerate if there is another year without a true winter? Will you run into problems? And how conservative is your balance sheet for SPL? And then another point, your mines, mine life. Can you tell us a bit about that? Are there options in the ground field expansion? Are you thinking of that? And if so, have you attributed any costs or are you already at your technological limits? First question. I have to look at that. I can't tell you. I don't know the cash flow by heart, unfortunately. Then the sensitivity of our goodwill in Chile of 90 million euros with probable weak or mild winters in the future, I don't see that problem because the company not only sells or produces de-icing salt. In the future, they will more and more go into commercial and industrial salts. They will make good income here as well. We have a logistics unit, a shipyard, that makes sure that there will be a very normal cash flow and regeneration effect. So we not only have concentrated on de-icing salt, it used to be their focus. These were the quick wins of our predecessors. But we'll concentrate more in the other areas, on the other areas in the future that are not under that much focus at the moment. But I think we've made a good beginning. I mean, we have to deal a lot with integration matters. And once the first half of 2007 is over, then definitely we'll present you more interesting news from Brazil and Chile. Now, what's nice with the EFEF is, whoops, who was it with the microphone? Sorry. I mean, the additional values that we earn should not be stated as a cash flow. I mean, they have to be attributed to economic assets that we have. I mean, the 235 million euros for the warehouse in Chile, for the deposits in Chile, were brought about that way. And now they have a life cycle of 250 years. So that's unforeseeable, I mean, in terms of depreciation. I mean, we could have done it over 5,000 years as well. Then it would have been totally different. These are the issues at hand. And, you know, now your third question. With that business, we would like to achieve other goals as well. The second port terminal is being built, industrial sort, needs a bit more machinery, equipment. This is to happen in the future, so it will work out. But we are in the process of making success here as well. I can't give you clear figures. I mean, our industrial salt sales will be increased by that and that. I can't tell you precisely, but we are on the right track.
On your question of the mine life in Germany, I currently see no deposit that currently gives us reason to worry. But we do have deposits of a different value and different contribution to earnings. And our biggest mine, Tillitz, which is our strongest in performance, has a duration of 30, 40 years still to go. And we can assume that other mines are similar. Some might be a bit shorter in their mine life, but still, if the one or other activity might not be continued, underground, that doesn't mean that we have to exit the business overground also. In all locations, we also have disposal and other activities organized around that mining business. So if we have to partially exit the one or other mine, it doesn't mean that we have a strong impact on our earning situation. Well, if we had a break in of water into one of our larger mines, that would be bad, but there's no sign of anything like that happening anytime soon. On the other hand, similar to oil business, we think of secondary mining, manless mining, and these things. We're not at the end of development. There are also some technical options we need to look into. So the life of a mine might be extended by using new technologies, other processes. So we might be able to extend the life by going deeper. Also, more flat mines could be exploited. So this is in a flow, and we're working on it. No microphone. No, I believe that would mean that above ground we would have to invest. And don't forget that this is really the larger part. If you have invested in pits, in mining underground, this is very expensive. So you rather excavate salt down there further. So the concentration underground to achieve an even greater exploitation there, that is a way we're looking into expanding our business so that we don't get 8 million tons out of it per year, but 8.8 million. So to get a better input, so with the available equipment, we can generate a higher output. That is our goal. Mr. Rüdiger and Mr. Nagorny and Mr. Koba. You go first. Martin Rüdiger from Chiffreux. Three questions on the potash fertilizer business in Europe. You have certainly a lot of contracts for the first half year and might have a good overview of the first half year in Europe for the potash business. Is it right to assume that the sales prices for Europe in the potash business are in the average one-digit percentage range? Second question, hedging the energy costs. Making sure that energy costs don't increase further, is that similar to currency hedging? What kind of costs do we have to expect in the coming year because of the hedging or security? And the third question concerns Fertiva. Dr. Bethke, you said that in the second quarter of 2006, or second half year of 2006, Fertiva sales suffered from the high price level. Does it mean that customers have a certain pain level concerning nitrogen fertilizers? Is there also a cross-read to other fertilizers? Like potash fertilizers in Europe, is there also such a pain level? Let me begin by answering the second question on hedging energy costs. Well, we do something different here than double barrier options. We have a pure options there that we purchased against a amount under 5 million. That allows us to have a cap at which our partner then will have to come in if gas prices exceed a certain price level. We did that at a point in time where the crude oil prices were about $50 per barrel. Now the price is about $58, so after costs for the option, we are on the safe side against energy price increases. And I might say that we can make sure that the energy prices don't exceed the level of 2006. So no increases, even though the price increase is expected in the market. So we have a slight advance against our planning, our budget. Potash business in Europe, that's a very heterogeneous business. We have about 1 million tons of industrial kali sulfate, corn potash, and potash 60. So we have all these different types. And if I put all that into one pot, then you might be quite right with your estimate of a mid one-digit estimate. That's, well, 5-6, that's a bit high. Expect something in the classical agricultural fertilizer, 4-5-6 euros. And industrial potash sulfate might be higher prices and price increases. So as a trend, the price increases in the spot business overseas are now higher than the prices that we determined a bit earlier in November, December. Back then, we had a bit lower price level. But there will be some additional contributions to earnings due to the price increases in this field. That was it. Yeah, then we had the energy of Fertiva, the prices. There's something, well, traditionally, farmers for a bag of potash didn't pay more than X Deutschmarks. And they saved a lot of money there. But this world has changed. In Europe, there is something like that still. But farmers are confronted with very high nitrogen prices. And the ammonia that needed to be purchased was quite high. And urea prices were very high, but were a reference. Now they have even exploded. Urea prices on the international business level have increased further, and the connection between the two has dissolved a bit. But, well, the speculations have not really worked out, and now they need to buy. There's some resistance points in prices that has a tradition, but looking at the increased wheat prices, whatever the farmers achieve, this price also, or price level, can change. There's some traditional mindsets. I think it's a generation problem. So those who really calculate figures, they know what they can get out if they fertilize more, if they buy nitrogen fertilizers, for example. And these more intelligent farmers are really on the fore. And in the U.S. and in other markets, we have been able to observe that for quite some time. If you talk to the Farmers Association in Germany, for example, the farmers currently are quite satisfied. And, yeah, they don't really complain too much currently. The next term was Mr. Nagorny and then Mr. Grohr. I have a question. Maybe I didn't understand it correctly. On the de-icing salt in the first quarter of 2007, the winter was bad. What could that possibly do to the result of the first quarter? Possibly the impact is stronger than expected. Then I have three completely different questions. One question on Chile. What is your relationship with the trade unions? You purchased the company for quite a good price, I think. But we hear or did hear that there were some strikes. What is going on there? What's the relationship with the employees? Are they happy? And another question, BASF is still a shareholder of yours. Fidelity also somewhere else? Certainly some more shareholders? No? Mr. Nagorny, de-icing salt business in the first quarter. In Europe, low, poor. If you compare it to the profit contribution ASCO in the first quarter of 2006 with more than 40 million euros, we will certainly not be able to achieve that level, and we will miss it by far. So the SPL, de-icing salt business in the US, was extremely slow in starting and was also below budget and plan. But in February, it achieved the estimated level, and in March, was still selling de-icing salt in March, even more than planned. So that's a positive development. It's not really that great. It can't offset the bad results of January, but still. So the winter in Europe and in the US led to a result that is at quite a good level considering the circumstances. So somewhere we will have a winter somewhere again, either in the US or in Europe, and if we're lucky, in both continents at the same time. So now that we have the US business at the same time, we will have a dent in our development in Europe at ESCO, and we will kind of offset it through our American business. It will not be a top performance, but it is quite a satisfactory result. It's good that we have SPL, which is a supplier of the de-icing salt and also delivers some earnings. No microphone. We do not only do de-icing salt, we also have the salt for chemical transformation and others. As a long-year partner of these analyst conferences, you know that we are flexible in working times. So if we do not have to produce so much, we have less working hours spent in the facilities. And we didn't know that last year, so we don't have the same weekend shifts as we had last year. But we don't believe that the de-icing salt business will be negative, but it will not be a very top performance either. But on the whole, it's quite refreshing and helpful that SPL supports us in the first quarter in the de-icing salt business. And secondly, the trade unions in Chile, you remember correctly that in the last year there were some strikes. These strikes have especially taken place in the copper business. But in the north of Chile, at SPL, we couldn't really feel it because the organization of trade unions is different than in Europe or in Germany. It's not collective agreements for the entire industry. It's limited to individual companies. And due to the much higher copper prices, the workers of the Chilean copper industry felt that they were not rewarded sufficiently, and the trade unions were active. But that only affects the area of copper production. So a slight increase in wages was negotiated there. At SPL, we did not feel any of these effects. And the relation in the production in the north, in further facilities in Chile, is okay. It's not warm and very close, but it's good. And the third question, if I may, or Dr. Bittke, would you like to read it out? I have here on page 40 of our now published annual report, if you would like to read it. BASF has 10% of our shares. Then the investment company Prudential PLC and its subsidiary MNG Group Limited on the 3rd of February of last year told us that they have a 5% limit that's exceeded by 5.2, and the capital research management company said that through its, well, it's a subsidiary, that they now hold a share of 5.2% of our company. Then we have Franklin Mutual Advisors on the 7th of February 2007 informed us that they also exceeded the 5% level with 5.04% of shares. And Deutsche Bank equally on the 13th of February announced that their subsidiary DWS Investment GmbH has 5.07%. So all these are good names, I believe. Okay? Mr. Grube, Bestelby, my first question refers to renewable energies. There are some legal changes also in the near future. Does that have any consequences for you at the Western European market for potash fertilizers? The 2 or 3% trend you indicated, will there be any impact on that? And what kind of grains, what kind of plants or crops can be mentioned with the potash fertilization? And I saw that you sell pharmaceutical salt. Can you tell us something about the midterm trend, a forecast of sales, and the margin of this product compared to other salt products in the segment? Well, renewable energies have positive consequences also for potash business. Rapeseed is a potash consumer, but also corn and other products being cropped. I know that special energy plants are produced, and you can't create more mass with air. Genetic engineering can create some resistance, but for more mass, you need more nutrients. So balanced fertilization comes in again. Plants are exactly tested for their nutrient requirements and how that needs to be balanced. And we have opportunities for our fertilizers to come in here, also with the stabilized fertilizers in the midterm, to create an additional sales outlet for ourselves. And the volume, this 1% worldwide, which I talked about, well, 2 years ago at the IFA in Paris, we had an estimate for the annual consumption, and experts produce it. It was a 2% increase back then. And now, due to the energy and the required natural resources for that, the forecast was increased by a further percentage point. We assume, and our consultants work in close cooperation with universities to find out exactly what the optimum potash and nitrogen input is for this new segment for fertilizers, corresponding to the climate, the soil, and so on. So we're working on that. Second question on API salt, pharmaceutical salt. With the NHCl, you can produce a whole range of salts, de-icing salt to extremely pure salt for pharmaceutical products. So it's very difficult to give you an average price or margin for the entire salt business, because products, great volume products like de-icing salt, compared to other salt types, are not always comparable concerning their margin. We have some niche products, for example, the pharmaceutical salts. So the API salt is a product which we offer as the first. This salt is extremely pure for a pharmaceutical use and has this API quality required that is certified by a specific document. And right from the start of the production and the launch in the market, we have had quite a lot of success. And we're now testing whether the production capacity in Germany and in France and Dubai need to be increased because we have such a big success. And certainly, we have placed the product in the market that it is the Rolls-Royce of pharmaceutical salts. So we do have a nice margin. And since we're the front runner, the first spearheading that development, we hope that we can keep this advantage and not only use it in Germany, but we would like to expand our market from Europe into the world. I think we have 12,000 tons production capacity currently, so the volume is not really comparable to industrial salt and de-icing salt.
A question from the internet, and then Mr. Gruding. 2 points about the new China settlement with Russia. The question is whether the Russian supply more to China and the European market could be discharged a bit, so to speak, or relieved. And the Potashkop recently has given its estimate for the building of a greenfield mine of $1.6 billion. No, has been increased to $1.6 billion for a 2 million mine. Do you think that's a new price pressure on the potash price level? That it will go up, the price then? Well, first point, very clearly, the Russians. I said that we have an artificially suppressed demand in the two big markets, that's China and India. And don't forget, India, they have a nearly communist government that promised a lot to farmers, and with potash they couldn't fulfill that. The government wants to compensate for that, and we have heard that the Russians deliver more and more to India and also to China, and that relieves the other markets, also Western Europe, our classical markets. So we see that the volumes that come in here from Russia are a bit smaller now, based on the latest statistics. Okay, they are always lagging behind a few months, but also the price increases that we saw in the world markets, like in Brazil. The Russians are price leaders here. So I see that with scarcer volumes, they deal with the market in a very good budget situation. So the deliveries to China rather relieve the situation. That's a positive influence on the price situation in the other markets. And what Mr. Doll said about the cost development of greenfield plants, well, I don't understand that. I don't want to say anything about it. But look at steel. I mean, they have overground processing solution or crude salts. Classical type, you know, and this has risen, or this has made steel prices going up $1 billion for, you know, I mean, that it should be 60%. I can't imagine. But it depends where you do it. There you'll have significant price increases. We have had that for quite some years. That's true. And this is also something that you have to face. People who want to enter the potash market in 5 to 6 years' time will face different costs, that is financing and also depreciations. We old ones, we have mines and plants that we have written off, and maybe only reinvestment, repair has to be earned for. But the new plants and mines have to be depreciated against 2 or 1.5 billion, and depends on where the deposit is. That will drive costs up, and cost margins for the newcomers will be reduced. Could be once we have the first newcomers in 5-6 years' time, then there will be a price trend upwards, probably. Mr. Gruden, two questions. Operative. If I saw it correctly, for ammonia and sulfate and industrial salts, you generated very pleasant growth in the last quarter, and for industrial salts, also corrected with the SPL effects. Is that a trend, a general trend that you could also see for 2007? Could you break it down to volumes and prices, price effects? And then second question about the energy cost hedging. Was I right that 100% energy costs based on gas was hedged? Question, is that a rolling or continuous process? Do you want to do that in the future as well? And who's your partner? I start to answer the second question. We are in the year 2007. We hedged that, the open contracts becoming effective this year. And here we've got the effect that we talked about at different meetings, the time deck of certain things that become manifest. Certain prices that have accrued for April and May. I mean, they are fixed because the time was created half a year ago, so you can't reach those goals. So Hagen was for the volumes that were still open, June till December 2007. This is what we did. But only for 2007. I mean, it's new territory that we have embarked upon. Of course, we have to learn about it more in the future. But on the other hand, you should look at the expectations if you buy options. And what about those? You are talking about that financial market of the future. And the curve goes steeply up. The longer you, the more you get into the future. I mean, and we were quite low. And it was at acceptable costs that we bought the option. But when the development goes on, you know, then it will be a price at 60 minus, and then maybe the curve might flatten again, because this is according to the market expectation of those who are in the markets. And to buy an option for 2008, that's not very attractive for us at the moment. And therefore, we only did it for 2007, but with the effect that I described before. Ammonium sulfate, yes, it grew substantially and prices continue to grow. Fativa is the exclusive partner for the caprolactam volume, which is a byproduct, 1.2, 1.3 million at Bayer and also BASF. And in addition, autonomously in Antwerp, we invested for the coarse grain crystalline, that's 160 to 200,000 tons. And the additional income that we make here will be to the benefit of Fativa. Don't expect millions. It's 1 to 2 million, more or less. And then we have a fixed margin agreed with our two sales partners. So the big additional business goes again to the owner of the plant. But it's nice to have such a stable business. That's good for Fativa. Industrial salt, the one of Mr. Steiner, or our industrial potash business, salt. The industrial salt business is a product, as a matter of fact, which is, you know, developed and produced on the basis of evaporated salt. And it's the most energy-intensive part for salt producing. And I think all market participants woke up eventually and understood that because of the high energy costs involved, you must not sell it at a too low price. So there is a very positive development here, definitely, that leads to an increase of industrial salt prices now and in the future. This has to be the case because we are not market leaders in terms of volume, and therefore we cannot be the market leader in terms of the price. This is something that AXO has to do. That was in the past, a volume-oriented policy, but now we see that there is much more price awareness nowadays, and people continue that. I've seen another question of Mr. Schramm from HSBC. Two questions. The investment volume that has taken a big leap this year. But where would be the normal level, including SPL, for the years to come? And what the volume of depreciation do you expect for 2008 in that connection? And then a question about Compo. You talked about acquisitions, but there was always hesitance because prices were very high. The situation has not changed, so we cannot expect that that will change. Is that correct? Mr. Schramm, about your question about depreciation of investment. Well, the 210 are composed of 20 overhang. I mean, following the forecast of last year for 2006, you might remember that We assumed an investment volume of 150 million, and you can see in the balance sheet of the year it was then 130. The remaining 20 in discussion with the supervisory board will be carried over to this year, the current year, and we will then fill up the 190. But of course, some extraordinary activities happened. In Chile, at SPL, of course, the completion of the port terminal and the systems belonging to that cost us 15 million, if I'm not mistaken, 15 million euros. Then, on top of that, this year and also next year, there will be an exchange of ship. That is one of the four ships that the Emprimar, the subsidiary company, the shipping company, will be scrapped and a new one will be bought. And the price will be 13 to 15 million euros. And then, you know, you have some other extraordinary activities for next year as well. There will be another ship that we have to buy in Chile. And then the Vera, we had the waste incinerating plant, and the E.ON partner will pay 3 million here, and we have to adjust and adapt our plants, and that will also require a two-digit euro amount. So these are the three highlights, and that that amounts for 60 million extraordinary investment. And once the power plant is built on the Vera, that volume won't come. But of course, you always have to look at the basic situation, that is replacement investment or safeguarding investment in order to keep the big machine that is our company running. But the replacement fuel, the power plant, that's an important in terms of strategy and also return of investment. From a strategic point, it's important because much of the gas consumed in that region can be replaced by an alternative fuel, that is household waste, and that makes us less dependent on fossil fuel, that is gas. And because of the special situation that we buy power and gas, evaporated gas, as it were, in this power plant, I think this will significantly reduce the costs. So it will offer us a very nice return, although we also see wherever steel and iron is needed, it's not so low price. It's not so cheap. And therefore, we invest or will invest in that area. We have announced that. We want to have a similar project with a partner in the Netherlands for the Frisia and also for our plant in Zielitz. We are thinking of projects like that. We always said that we would invest into that because we are convinced that the return generated will help us. And also, strategically, it makes us less dependent on gas supplies. That's very attractive for us. We always said we'll spend that money for that, and we always have this 10% after taxes plus. That's the return there. And you ask about depreciation volumes. Of course, you didn't mean that I would answer what we have invested will be depreciated or written off one day. You wanted to know what the depreciation rate will be, and that will be 140 and 150 million more or less for the years to come.
On Compo, I can only say we did try to look for the one or other acquisition, but it was too expensive for us, so we said no. And now England, Ireland, we're going a different direction, try to proceed with the cooperation. If that doesn't work, we'll just drop it. We're in such a good position at Compo that what we have achieved so far will not be destroyed by a too optimistic investment strategy. Quite the contrary is the case. Mr. Reifenberger, Deutsche Bank. Two brief questions. Could you give us more insight into the tax rate for the future? Three effects. The tax asset, SPL, will be reduced. that will have an impact on your P&L and your tax burden, then the loss carry forwards have been used up, and then we have the tax reform in 2008. Can you maybe dare to make a statement on that? And a second question, in your outlook, what kind of price increase have you forecasted, maybe only for the first half year? And of these price increases, how much will impact the operating business? Higher expenditures for the excavation of your mines, just to shed some light on these items. Let me begin with the taxes. There are three aspects you mentioned: tax development in Chile, then the utilization of the asset, and the taxes in Germany, the carry loss forward, and the outlook on the tax reform. The tax rate in Chile, 17%. Tax rate in Germany, what do we have? 37%. Still. So the compensation must be smaller, also facing the profit potential in Chile, a bit lower than the much more profitable activities in Germany. That is quite good. If you look at the cash basis, the cash outflow due to the German taxes, the full corporate income tax second quarter of this year is much higher, yes. And in the end, you need to see that the corporate tax rate will be impacted by the full integration of SPL for the entire year. But that is a virtual, not a real tax rate, because it includes deferred and actual tax. So more cash will flow out. That's certainly what you wanted to ask. And in Germany, due to the end of our loss carry forward, will be compensated in a bit by the Chile statement. I won't dare to say too much, but I assume that the announcement of the 6.4 or 6.7 billion of relief will also be reflected in our balance sheet. But I'm a very careful person. My first steps in my career were in the tax field. And, some proposals for new tax law might be scrapped completely or might be changed completely. And, after the government has decided what they want to go for, after it has actually become a law, we will not make any statements. What's proposed so far is a fair weather friend. If it's really a bad economic situation, then the situation might look quite differently. I hope that the results will... it's very difficult to say, really. Let's postpone this question. Maybe we can answer the question at the conference call in August. Maybe we can then talk about that back then. That would be maybe better. Price increases and the excavation of our cavities. No, it's actually what we planned to extract further salt from our deposits. But we are in some areas down there that are not that high yield. And we try to use our full capacity. We need about 100 workers more this year. That's between 5 and 6 million. But that's worth it. I think 3 or 4 times it's worth it to do so. And on the price increases, you can imagine that at the beginning of a year, we're very careful to say something about price increases. But we can tell you that we have a very clear price increases in the first quarter already recorded, and further are already announced. The Russians, the Canadians have announced that $20 to $25 on the current price level additionally will take place. Whether that is actually becoming true, whether that will work in Asia, we don't know. We have a lever of 8 million tons, and if you only take half of it, and if only half of the price increases that we hear about, then we have very nice additional earnings contributions, but we do not want to quantify them yet. Let's just wait a bit until the annual general meeting, and I might be able to give you some more concrete figures. But the price trend is positive. Mr. Boers? Dr. Bethke, I'd like to talk about nitrogen. You mentioned that the potash delivery is very tight, and Fertiva is in this business segment. What are the capacity developments in the coming years and the demand trends? You said that urea is scarce, and what kind of new facilities for ammonia, what new plants for nitrogen are available? Well, that's a very difficult topic. Plants are opened anew, and you need to look at the different levels of the nitrogen business. There are the haves that are fully integrated, that have ammonia too, then the non-haves that only work downstream. So like us in Antwerp work together with BASF, they have no ammonia. So we have to purchase about 100% ammonia, mainly in Russia and other markets. In the Near East, they have very cheap gas. That was the right strategy in the past. And then there are big urea plants that are downstream that press prices down for some time until this trend is absorbed again. Then in China and India, there are nitrogen plants that are not economical at all, that are a big contamination, that's not environmentally friendly. And it's about millions of tons that might have to be closed down. And then capacities in the Arab countries might be balanced off by that. So nitrogen, you can only say one thing. You need to be really competitive. You need to be the low-cost producer. That starts with the gas, continues with the ammonia. And if you're low-cost there, you can invest into nitrogen. If you're not, better take your hands off. And that's our strategy also at Fertiva. If we're successful to have a partnership with a low-cost ammonia producer, then we could imagine not only to trade nitrogen products, but maybe also to become a producer one day. But as long as we don't have the right prerequisites, we won't do that. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I believe... Oh, there's a question, Mr. Kühler. Well, I have smaller questions, three of them. The first, Mr. Steiner, you said one-off costs, financial results. Could you expand on that a bit? And for 2007, are there one-off effects that will take place, or will everything be normal? And Dr. Bicke, for Compo, you said there's stronger competition in France. Is that only regional, or do we need to worry that this spills over? And the third question concerns partnerships, which you have mentioned several times, that you're open for all segments for expansion and partnership. What do you imagine this to be like? What kind of capex, what kind of investment volume would you be able to manage as K plus S? The questions on the financial results can be answered as follows. These non-recurrent items in the last year, that was mainly a tax stamping fee that was due in Chile. I think there was about 4 million euros. And the same amount was also spent last year for currency hedging of the purchase price. Not that the dollar increases too much on us, so we hedged against a too strong dollar for the purchase price for the acquisition to keep that at an acceptable level. as we had calculated it to begin with, and the calculation worked out. And Mr. Herrmann, thank you for the comment. We also try to sell unused assets. That's our policy. We had quite some real estate housing and an office in Berlin, which we sold for 10 million book value. That's something we cannot continue to write down. That was really the biggest real estate object that we inherited from our previous owners, and now that was sold very well after we have spent some thought and negotiation on selling it off. So we have not many more hidden reserves. On Compo France, well, that's just the case. At Carrefour, that's one of the biggest groups, we dropped out because one of our competitors negotiated much better terms. And this market share was compensated in other areas in Europe. So it's always individual customers, but that is quite some volume with high profit contributions, and it hurts if you lose them. But it was neutralized, it was balanced off by some activities on our side, and we always need to have the right method. We need to work as good accountants of our books. Also, we always want to be profitable. And as in Chile, every project needs to be profitable for us. We wouldn't invest 3 billion at a time. We would have to do that together with someone else. If we find a company that we would desperately want to buy, we'll find a partner. We have very creative people, and you can always find the funds. But if we look at our cash flow, if we look at our income, our earnings, an acquisition, 300 to 500 million euros, with an earning capacity that justifies the price, is something we can still imagine to do. But we always think, well, not to concentrate too much on one segment, but rather buy the bit smaller companies to be on the safe side. Oh, and I don't really want to say much more on it. We also acquire business that only costs 40 to 60 million if they have the right profitability. That often offers some additional synergies because they add to our core business. All right, then that was the last question, and I would like to thank you very much for your interest in the K plus S group, and I hope that we were able, as in the previous years, we're able to answer all your questions, and you are now convinced that K plus S will be a good investment in the future too. I wish you all the best, and goodbye to all of you.